Hi, this is Guy Kawasaki. You're listening to Mr. Media, you poor slob.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to the marshmallow master, Joaquim de Posada, author of Keep Your Eye on the Marshmallow, Gain Focus and Resilience, and Come Out Ahead. Stick around. This is the third book in a series that has sold more than 3 million copies around the world. But it's only the first co-authored by me, Mr. Media. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of people who can count marshmallows all day, but would rather be counting dollar bills all night, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. A few weeks ago, my daughter Rachel and I went with another family on a college visit to the Ringling College of Art and Design in Sarasota, Florida. On the drive down, Wendy's mom asked me about my new book, written with internationally recognized motivational speaker Joaquim de Posada, Keep Your Eye on the Marshmallow. She wondered if it was based on the landmark Stanford University study in which young children were put at a table with nothing but a single marshmallow. They were told that if they did not eat the delicious treat in front of them in 15 minutes, they would get a second marshmallow. Now, the world, it seems, is split up among those of us who can delay gratification and are willing to wait for it, and those whose impulse control is such that their desires must be satisfied right now. Now, it turns out that Wendy's mom had tried out the marshmallow experiment on her daughter at a very young age. Her result? Wendy had the patience to wait 15 minutes to be rewarded. Now, this behavior, science tells us, bodes very well for Wendy's future as a productive member of society. As for those children in the experiment who could not wait to consume the single marshmallow, well, their future, not so bright. Now, Keep Your Eye on the Marshmallow is the third book in a series of international bestsellers with more than 3 million copies in print. It is a unique hybrid of fiction and nonfiction, opening and closing with a true parable and an update of the latest scientific marshmallow research. The gooey center of the book, however, follows the fictional tale of the ever-ambitious Arthur and his challenges to balance saving his marshmallows in business against being a loving husband and father. Now, joining me today is the world's real marshmallow theory expert and proponent, my friend, Joaquim de Posada. Welcome, Joaquim.
Thank you, Bob. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
Always nice to be around you, even if there are no charburgers to be had.
Oh, yes.
Look, Joaquim, obviously we've talked, but I'm sure that there will be thousands of people who will watch this video or listen to the audio, and they'll be thinking, how can a single marshmallow have such a big impact on someone's life? And maybe we should start there. Can you explain that?
Yes, it's absolutely amazing. You know, it all came from that original experiment done at the University of Stanford, where they took our 643 children, boys and girls, they placed them in a room all by themselves with a marshmallow, and they told the child, Johnny or Mary, I'm going to leave you here with a marshmallow. If when I come back, the marshmallow is here, I'll give you two. If you want to eat it, you go ahead, just eat it, just ring the bell and eat your marshmallow, and I'll be back, but you will not get a second one. So it was very clear instructions to tell a child to wait 15 minutes for something they like, Bob, is equivalent of you and I saying, let's wait 3 hours or 4 hours for a cup of coffee. It's a long time. So what happened? 2 out of 3 ate the marshmallow. 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, 4 minutes, 8 minutes. They simply could not stand it. In fact, the average wait maybe was 3.5 minutes of the kids that ate the marshmallow. They just could not wait any longer. However, 1 out of 3 already understood the most important principle for success, which is self-discipline, the ability to delay gratification. That child already at 4 understood that. And what he would do, or what she would do, is look at the marshmallow, sometimes smell it, put it back. Other kids went under the table. They look up. Some of them started daydreaming using that as a technique, because most people think that this is a matter of willpower. Well, some of them, yes, had willpower, but a lot of them, it wasn't willpower. A lot of them was a child bright enough to understand hey, I like marshmallows and I want it now. However, if I shift my attention to something else, I will eliminate temptation. That way I will not fall under temptation. Mm-hmm. And that child was able to not eat the marshmallow, even though he or she would have fallen on the temptation of eating it if he had not done another tactic to get away from the temptation. So 2 out of 3 ate it, 1 out of 3 did not. 15 years later, follow-up study. And what do they find? They found that 100% of the children that did not eat the marshmallow were successful. Their SAT exam grades were 213 points higher on average than the kids that ate the marshmallow. Hmm. They had good grades, good relationships. They were doing well. The kids that ate the marshmallow, many of them never made it to college. They were working low-paying jobs, delivering pizzas, pumping gas. Some of them made it to college and dropped out. Some of them were in college with bad grades. Just a few. Something changed them, and they were doing well. A coach, mother, a father, something taught them this very important principle of delaying gratification and having self-discipline. Hmm.
Why did they choose marshmallows? Why not, I don't know, raisins or maraschino cherries or something else? Why marshmallows?
Oh, they did. Oh, no. Oh. The experiment was repeated several times with M&Ms, with marshmallows, with toys. It was done in different ways. I just chose marshmallow because that was the original experiment. Mm-hmm. But it's been repeated with other kinds of treats.
I tell people that they can go on YouTube and look up the experiment. And one of the things that will come up is a college experiment that was done with beer.
That's right.
That was pretty funny because you think, okay, you know, I'm not that interested in four-year-olds. Well, if you go online, you can on YouTube. They did it sincerely. I mean, it's kind of funny to watch, but they did it with beer, and that, you know, the idea was to see, well, could college students, you know, not pick up a beer for 15 minutes? Well, that's pretty tough too for these college kids.
That's right. Now, if you're going to send people to watch the experiment, you can send them to the TED.com page and then search for marshmallows, and you'll find the experiment I conducted with 4-year-old and 5-year-old kids, which is very, very funny.
And more than 1 million views, as I understand.
Yes, it's past 1 million views, and it's going fast. Mm-hmm.
Now, why was it important that they studied 4-year-olds? Why not 3-year-olds or 5 or 8-year-olds?
Well, it seems that at 4 years, a child already in the development stage is at a point where he or she can make a decision whether to wait or eat it now. It's a moment in their lives where they are, their personality is just starting out, and then you can identify which way would they lean when they grow up. Hmm. If you get older, 6, 7, you know, they're too old. They already know, I want to fool I want to fool the psychologist, or I want to fool my mother or whatever. But at 4, there's not that thinking of, you know, ulterior motives. Mm-hmm. And they just simply do the experiment.
I think two of the examples I was thinking of as you were describing it were, you had the kid who would lick the marshmallow. And then the one very clever kid, thought he was very clever, who ate the inside of the marshmallow and left the hollow shell.
That's right.
That was pretty good.
So funny. That was pretty funny, yes.
Yeah. I'd like to know how those kids wound up, you know?
We'll know in 10 years.
Yeah, well. And so they've the original creator of the experiment is still following this, right? I mean, he must be like 100 years old by now.
Very old. He must be he's over 85. Uh-huh. Over 85, Dr. Mitchell. I think he's he left Stanford and his last university is Columbia in New York. And I think that he's pretty well going into retirement. I need to check what he's doing now, but he was almost ready to be retired.
But there are still people following the original subjects of the study.
Oh, absolutely. Those kids that were participating in the original study are 46 now. And we covered that in our book. Mm-hmm. We tell people what happened to them, how they're being measured, MRIs, their life history, everything to see what happened to those kids at 4, now 46. What happened to their lives? Some of them, of the group that is being studied, some of them ate marshmallows, some of them don't. And, of course, we are finding, which it's difficult to change, right, Bob?
Yeah, yeah, it is.
A lot of them did not change.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, we can separate. We can say that the marshmallow resistors, people who are able to not eat the marshmallow in that 15 minutes, in general, they have done very well, according to the study.
Very well. And they're doing very well.
The ones who gobbled their marshmallow, to take from the title of one of the earlier books, not as good. Now, is it absolute? Is it an absolute rule, or is it just an observed behavior? Do you think?
No, it's not absolute, because anything in human behavior cannot be absolute. It's a tendency. It's a minority, but it's not absolute, because you might be a marshmallow eater, okay, and then at 46 you win the lottery and you won $600 million. Mm-hmm. So now you're rich. Okay, however, that $600 million winner, if that person is a marshmallow eater all through his life, there might be a very big percentage of probability that he or she will spend the money and be broke in 3 or 5 years.
So why did this study appeal to you personally? I mean, I think of myself, and as we've gotten to know each other and I read the two preceding books and worked on this one, I would describe myself as a marshmallow resistor. I feel pretty comfortable saying that I could resist the marshmallow. But what is it that appealed to you about this study that, it's become a whole, career?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's made probably the biggest difference in my career, these marshmallow books and speaking at TED. Those are the two big factors in my success as a professional speaker. Well, Bob, to be honest with you, I was a marshmallow eater. But I became a marshmallow eater because of my personal circumstances of having to live, my parents put me in a plane with my little sister and I alone to come to the United States to flee communism. My dad was a very strong believer in democracy, and he didn't want me to live in Cuba, which was falling into communism. Now, because my father then came to visit me in the States, and while he was here, they went and took everything from him. The military people went, they took the house, the cars, every property. Suddenly my dad lost everything, and at 50, had nothing. And we became very poor after being very rich. I kept that image in my mind, and I said, you know what? No one's going to take it away from me. So I will spend everything I get. Because I know that if I do what my dad did, which he saved money, he was not a marshmallow eater. He was a marshmallow resistor. But it didn't work out for him because someone came and took everything. At that time, I did not have the mentality to think that we are a nation of laws. We have a separation of powers. And there's safeguards here in the States that have been traditionally here since the forefathers thought about this magnificent experiment of the new republic. We didn't have that solid base in Cuba. But at that time, I would not be able to think. I wasn't able to think that. I was thinking that, yes, if it happened there, it can happen here. So I just became a spender. I would eat all the marshmallows. And that went on for many years until I read. Actually, I first saw the experiment while studying psychology in my bachelor's degree. But didn't pay much attention to it. It was part of the class. But then I came in contact with it later on in life. And I said, wow, look at me. I am a marshmallow eater. And I had $70,000 in credit card debt. And I always made a lot of money, all through my life. I spent it all. And there's when I decided, wow, I have to change my ways. And, the tipping point was reading the book Emotional Intelligence by Dr. Goldberg. I was flying from San Juan, Puerto Rico to New York, and there was one page to the marshmallow experiment. And I said, how could the most important factor for success, how could it only have one single page? And that idea, sitting in that plane, of writing a book regarding the experiment, made all the difference in my life. That's why I tell people that knowledge is power. Yeah, that's true. Well, you know what? Applied knowledge is power. Because even though I knew, if I would have not applied it and written the book, hey, what would have happened? Nothing. Lots of people have great ideas, but they don't execute. And if you don't execute your ideas, nothing will happen. Mm-hmm. So this is a very important factor to execute and do what you need to do.
Well, I know when we first met and I read the first two books leading up to writing the third book, the thing that rang true for me was that Arthur, who's the protagonist for the most part throughout the books, he rang true in that I felt like he was a real person, and you acknowledged as much that a lot of Arthur comes from your own experience. And
exactly.
And I think, you know, I think people, when they read the third book, Keep Your Eye on the Marshmallow, if they feel that there's a lot of emotion and a lot of truth in Arthur in this particular book, it's not all from you, but it takes it. There is a liberal dose of Joaquin de Posada in this story as well, in different ways.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Also, in the original story, Jonathan also has stuff from me, mm-hmm. like a Xerox. I've spent many years with Xerox. I learned a lot there. So it's a mixture, but I'm more Arthur than Jonathan.
And one of the interesting things for people who've read the first two books, at least I think so, I will see if you agree, in the third book, it takes a little different tack. The first two books, it was a lot of things that were geared to business success and financial success, and that's still a big component. But here we kind of take the thought, Arthur has gone from being a single person with no responsibility to a college student. He went back to college late in life, and then he got married, and he had two kids. He and his wife had two kids. And so as we start the third book, he's kind of figuring out, or what he has to do is figure out, how do I save my marshmallows and yet go from being a single person to a married person and have two kids and then ultimately a business? And how do I make this whole marshmallow theory work in a different setting? And that's kind of what we challenged him with this time.
Yeah. We looked at it in a wider perspective. Instead of the business making the money and successful, we also decided that there was a state of well-being that people have to watch for. So we made it more humanistic, more inclusive. Yes, you have financial success, but you also need to have happiness in your job. You need to have good relationships, a happy marriage. You need to think about your community and the world. So it's a lot more on your health. You have to think about your health. So we made it a more well-being type of book, which will benefit, in our opinion, I think. I think you agree with me. It'll benefit more people than it did before.
I think it's got a slightly broader appeal. And we couldn't tell the same story again, obviously. We had to take it, and I think that's what's interesting. Yeah, it evolved. And I think what's interesting is, even if you've read the first two books, there's still some things that the marshmallow theory can teach you. And if you haven't read the first two books, you can start from here and get caught up on the story and still learn a lot.
Yeah. In fact, it will be interesting if they go for Keep Your Eye on the Marshmallow. That way they have the latest research and they'll have this story, the way it has evolved. And then, you know, hey, how did this guy start? Mm-hmm. Go to the original one to see how it all started.
Is it weird at all for you to have this book that kind of tells bits and pieces of your own story, particularly, you know, your youth, Cuba, and your father?
Well, I had to think about it, whether I wanted to share that. But in the end, I said, you know what, I have to share what I think should be shared. I think that it'll help a lot of people. And even if it puts me more on a vulnerability status, I was willing to take the chance. Mm.
And do you feel now, after three books, have you exhausted all that you have to say about the marshmallow theory, or is there another parable in there somewhere?
You know, basically, it looks like this is the end of the marshmallow run, but not necessarily. I can still think of an evolving fourth marshmallow book regarding probably old age, the golden years. Something geared to people that are over 65 and 70. It might be a possibility.
Maybe we have to show Arthur changing Jonathan Patient's diapers and.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Attending his funeral, you know.
Yeah, I thought about
and stuff like that. It definitely is an idea.
I thought about that.
We need to do good on this one, and I think we're going to do good. Why not? You know, if we add up the two marshmallow books, it's close to 4 million, 3.5, maybe 3.7. Mm-hmm. So they're doing well.
So next, I know you have another book in mind. It does not involve me, shockingly, but I, your daughter is a lot prettier than I am, so I will yield. But you're doing Postcards from Dad? Is that the?
Well, actually, the name is going to be Love Dad. Love Dad, because that's the way I ended all my postcards to my daughter. Mm-hmm. Love Dad, and then the byline is the one that we have thinking to see if we do a byline, a subtitle that is really powerful.
And you want to explain
we're
to people
working
what,
on it.
Explain to people what this the concept of this book is.
Yeah, the concept is, you know, there are what, millions of people that are divorced in the States, and a lot of people lose touch with their daughters and sons. And the families are divided, and that hurts our nation, hurts families. It is even very negative in the psychological point of, in the psychology of the people that don't have a father or a mother, and they have to be raised by one parent. So I faced that situation because I was divorced, and I had my daughter that I really wanted to maintain a close relationship with. So I made her three promises. One was to every year spend 4 days in a setting where she and I would be alone. In this case, I chose the youth program for the National Speaker Association. She would go to the youth program. I would be in the adult program. And that way we would have 4 days where we would be together. I said, let's test it one day, and if you like it, we'll do it. We did. We went to the first one. She loved it. We did it 12 years in a row. That was key in the development of my daughter, which is a very successful attorney nowadays. She won even national titles like the U.S. Constitutional Law Competition, and the prize was given by the Supreme Court judge in the Supreme Court chambers in Washington, D.C. So it did very well for her. Second, I promised her that I would send her a postcard from every city that I went. Since I travel 80% of the time, imagine, Bob, being divorced and traveling 80% of the time. That I would have lost my daughter, see, and I couldn't allow that to happen. So I promised her I would send a postcard from every city. And number three, I promised her that I would call her every day. And then when cell phones came into reality, I told her that she could always call me no matter where I was. And even if I was doing a speech, if I would look at the phone, it was her, I would answer the call. Imagine doing a speech for 500 people and keeping your phone open when I tell, when probably, usually the master of ceremony says, okay, people, now everybody turn off your phones. Here I'm thinking, gosh, I'm going to keep mine open. And if it rings, I'm going to look at it. And if it's my daughter, I'll answer the call, because that was my promise to her. It happened three times speaking on a speech. My daughter calls me and I answer. You're giving a speech. Is this an emergency? No, Dad, call me. Boom. And then I have to explain to the audience what happened. So what happened? Last Father's Day, my daughter gave me a great surprise. I go to her house. She gives me a little present. And then she said, Dad, I have a surprise for you. She goes upstairs and she comes down with every postcard I sent her for the last 25, 30 years. I mean, our whole lives evolving from the postcard I would send her, the advice, the stuff I told her what things that happened in her life. And we were both emotional about it. So there, her husband is sitting in the chair next to us, and he says, wow, now I understand. Now I understand. What do you understand? I understand why you have the best relationships, you and her, of any of her friends, of anyone I ever met in my whole life. You got to tell the world about this, because fathers need to know what you did so that we can rescue more kids that are now being raised with one single parent. And that's the whole concept.
Well, and I saw you spoke at the TEDx at Delray Beach, Florida, about a month ago, right before the book came out. And I got to tell people that you had every woman, you were breaking hearts, every woman in that theater, because Joaquin talked about this postcard project and his daughter, and he showed his phone. It was a wonderful setup, but he showed his phone and he told this story, and then magically the phone rang, of course, and it turned out his daughter was in the audience, and every woman, oh my God, they're like, oh
yeah.
No, they're just like, yeah. They're just melting. And
I saw men crying. I saw men in that audience crying.
Yeah, but you don't want men throwing themselves at you. You don't even want the women throwing themselves at you because you're in a long-term relationship. But my point is, he was just these women just fell apart. And okay, so the men did too, but I don't care about the men. So anyway, it's a great story, and I'm sure people will look forward to seeing that. Folks, listen, you can find Joaquim de Posada's new book, Keep Your Eye on the Marshmallow, Gain Focus and Resilience and Come Out Ahead, at great online retailers. Some airport bookstores have it now, where you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you are watching the show on video, right below the video, you should see a little image of the cover, and you can just click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon.com. It's also available on BarnesandNoble.com, BN.com. Click on it, order the book. You'll have it in 2 to 3 days. You can also get it. It's available on the Kindle and the Nook and all those things.
Bob, I'd like to remind people that are watching us, those that live in Miami, we're going to be doing a book signing in Books and Books June 4th at 8 p.m. Books and Books in Coral Gables. Those of you that live in Miami, hey, come and visit us and say hello.
And if you run a bookstore and you're looking for a great guest, this guy, have him. Invite him on, Joaquim@joaquimdeposada.com. Send him an email. He'll be interested. And, of course, website for you is joaquimdeposada.com. You've got a blog. It's joaquimworld.blogspot.com. There's a Facebook page for the book. It's facebook.com/keepyoureyeonthemarshmallow. He's on Twitter. He's everywhere, folks. Go find this man. Order our book. Our book, right? Okay.
Yes.
So we're clear on that.
Absolutely.
Yes. Joaquim, my friend, my co-author, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Bob. It was a real pleasure.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority, for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting. Go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout.